Food insecurity has been a concern for the past few years in Savannah. A 2019 Savannah Morning News investigation revealed the city slowly but surely lost chain grocers. The loss resulted in residents having to commute more than 10 miles for fresh produce, assuming they had the means to even do so. Savannah resident and urban farmer Edwin Thomas is looking to eradicate that issue with his agribusiness, CJ's Produce. Edwin joins this episode of The Commute to discuss being a Black farmer and how he's working to healthily feed Savannah. You are listening to The Commute Podcast, presented by National Office Systems. I'm your host, Raisa Habersham, a reporter at the Savannah Morning News. Today is Tuesday, July 6, 2021. Today's episode is an interview with Edwin Thomas, owner of CJ's Produce. A transcript of this interview will also be featured in our weekly newsletter, The 912. We'll cue up that interview right after I do the National Office Systems ad. Here at the Savannah Morning News, we recently reopened our offices, and it's been great seeing staffers in person regularly again. It helps that we have a great space designed and outfitted by Scott Center's team at National Office Systems. And we're not the only ones. National Office Systems has been working with Savannah area businesses for 30 years and leverages its partnerships with suppliers such as Dirt Modular Interiors and Herman Miller Furniture to deliver a top quality product. Learn more by visiting www.natoffsys.com. Well, thank you so much. I've read a little bit about you from the Black Farmers Network. I saw the profile. It was a really good profile. Can you tell us just a little bit about CJ's Produce and where did you get the idea to start an urban farm?
Well, CJ's Produce started out as basically a project between me and my father. And I named it after my son, CJ. And we started it 5 years ago. And we've just been planting. And basically, I got in touch with Leslie. Me and Leslie actually went to college together. And I knew that she was working for University of Georgia Extension here in Chatham County. And she fussed at me a little bit. Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? And pretty much I was given an opportunity to till someone's garden. And I posted it on my social media. And my best friend's mother, Miss Kim Williams, she had some property in Collar Brownsville. And so I reached back out to Leslie, and it's been on and popping since.
I love to hear it. I love to hear about urban farming because I've written a little bit about that in Savannah. I think we have the United States and the state of Georgia's largest food forest ever. So I'm always curious when people decide to become urban farmers. You know, can you tell us, I guess, a little bit about some of the fruits and veggies you do till?
Well, vegetable-wise, I do tomatoes, bell peppers, eggplants, celery. I'm in the process of actually trying to do snap peas and string beans. Fruit, I've done watermelon and cantaloupe. Someone actually donated me a pomegranate tree, so hopefully within the next year or so we can have some pomegranates being grown too.
Okay, I like to hear it. I know one of the reasons that you started the farm was also to address food insecurity. Can you talk a little bit about how food insecurity is affecting Savannah residents?
Well, food insecurities, or a lot of Savannah is pretty much a food desert. And a food desert is basically an environment with the lack of sufficient fresh and healthy foods. And a lot of the grocery stores are far away for a lot of people to even be able to purchase fresh produce. And with the pandemic going on, I was growing, I couldn't give food away. And some people have literally never tasted a fresh tomato before. And that just caught my attention, and I just ran with it. And I wanted to sell produce locally. I wanted to be able to get it to people who couldn't make it to the store, or the elderly, who don't have cars, or just being able to have the access to be able to to get fresh and healthy produce.
Wow. I'm glad that you saw that and saw that was an issue and thought of a solution to that. I'm new to the Savannah area. I've been here a little over 7 months now. And it hadn't dawned on me that Savannah was very food insecure. I'm from Atlanta originally, and we've talked about it there extensively about some pockets where there are food deserts, but I hadn't thought about that in Savannah as well. What's been the reaction since you've kind of started addressing food insecurity in the city?
At first, it was rather slow. It wasn't too receptive, and a lot of people thinking, you're a farmer, we live in Savannah. Where do you have land to be able to do this type of thing? And a lot of people don't understand, farming does not mean you have to have 700 acres and a mule to be able to produce. In my small plot in my mother's black backyard, in two months, I produced over 100 pounds of tomatoes. Mm. So you can be an urban farmer or you can be a traditional farmer. You know, it's a lot of different growing techniques that you can do. You can do indoor, you can do outdoor, you can do hydroponics. It's an array of things that you can do. So, and my family is from Dublin, Georgia. So it's actually in my blood to do this type of thing.
I was going to ask you to talk a little bit about that. I know that you come from a long history of farmers. And can you talk a little bit about that and the importance of black farmers?
So my great grandfather was a farmer, not a sharecropper. A sharecropper is basically someone who lives on someone else's property and works the land. My grandfather was not a sharecropper. My grandfather was his own farmer. My grandfather owned up to 600 acres of land. They would produce cotton, tobacco, soybeans, and pretty much anything you can probably grow. My grandfather, pecans, peaches. We even had animals, Black Angus cows, pigs, mm-hmm. chickens. He had it all. And that was basically how they put food on their table. They had to grow their own food, or they would have to harvest bales of cotton to take to the cotton gin and for them to be able to pay their bills or even have to go buy meat from the meat market, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. And my grandmother and her seven siblings, they grew up working the farm. And of course, you know, most of the times kids will steer away from what their parents do. All my aunts and uncles and my grandmother, they all went into the education field. They felt like it's a better way than being out here on these 600 acres every day. And my father, he would spend summers in Dublin working on the farm where, you know, helping my grandfather fix fences or going to herd the animals, picking peas, whatever the case may be, whatever the task was that day. Then I came along. Actually, I'm probably the only one in the family outside of my father's generation who took to the farming. And I'm technically considered the city kid because I was born and raised here in Savannah, whereas pretty much everybody else in the family was born and raised around the Middle Georgia area. A lot of what people don't understand is black farmers have basically been the ones carrying Georgia's produce for years now. Even back then, we would come with the different techniques, different ways to be able to produce whatever they were producing, whether it be pecans, whether it be peaches or tomatoes, cucumbers, whatever the case may be. We were the ones doing all the footwork, per se. And a lot of people don't understand how important that really is, because back then we had to survive by any means. So if it meant you had to go out there and grow your own food or herd your own food, we did it. And I want to bring that to light today, especially with everything going on and just being healthy in general. A lot of people don't know that, you know, if it doesn't have seeds, it's not real. Mm. And a lot of people may not understand what I said when I say that, because how do you have something that comes from a seed, but it doesn't produce seed? Watermelon, for example. I do not like seedless watermelon at all. For me, eating watermelon, spitting the seeds out was a part of eating watermelon. So now when you see seedless watermelons, it's like, I don't know about this. This is a little weird to me.
I've only ever seen watermelon with seeds in it. So I didn't know that seedless watermelon was a thing.
It is. Because some people, they just don't, I hate to say it, we're a little lazy. They're just more so rather, oh, I just want to eat the watermelon. Well, a lot of people don't understand a lot of your nutritional factor is in the seeds. Whether it's watermelon, tomatoes, cucumbers, whatever it may be, the seeds hold a lot of this nutritional value.
You mentioned that, you know, you're a city kid and you're probably the only one in your family who's still continuing your tradition of farming. But you've also involved your son in this as well. Can you talk a little bit about how you're passing that, the farming business, so to speak, on to your son?
Well, my son likes to eat. So the one thing we're going to do is we're going to make sure we eat. And I just wanted him to know that you can have your own. You don't necessarily have to depend on anyone. And not necessarily saying that in a business standpoint, just in general. Because I want him to be able to know who his great-great-grandfather was. Just as though I'm learning just that much more about my great-grandfather with the farming and stuff that I'm doing now. And it's a thing of keeping the legacy alive, because I honestly feel like on average, a lot of us, you know, we know nothing further than our grandparents, and we need to know where we came from so we can know where we're going.
I like that. How's he, I read that he doesn't like for people to pick from his plot of land. Is that true?
That is very true. He loves the aspect of going out there, being in the dirt, you know, even picking it, but he does not want anyone to eat it. He feels as though, you know, it's mine. I don't want you to eat it. Don't eat it. And like, he will cry if need be. But, and that's just because he doesn't know. And, you know, pretty much since he's been born, I've had him out there playing. If he's doing nothing but just playing with the spoon in the dirt, or, you know, surprisingly, you know, you keep kids around long enough, they will teach you some things. Last year was my first time growing broccoli, and I didn't necessarily know how to harvest broccoli, let alone that was my first time ever seeing broccoli being grown. And I took him out there and was like, you know, CJ, you know, where are we supposed to cut it? And he actually pointed to the exact spot where we were actually supposed to cut it off at. And that's just from him experiencing and being out there with me every day, hands and knees, picking weeds, whether we're harvesting or we're preparing the ground for it to be planted on. So it's been a learning experience for him and I.
And he's only 4, right?
Yes, he's 4.
Wow. I love it. Really, you know, there's a saying in this, not to sound cliche, but you're really planting the seeds in him early. So I like that you're passing along a bit of your family legacy through him. I want to transition a little bit. I know that you've recently partnered with the Forsyth Farmers Market. Can you talk to me a little bit about your partnership?
Well, basically, I work with the Forsyth Farmers Market Farm Truck 912. And basically, the farm truck takes local growers and they allow them to basically sell their produce to them. And the farm truck 912 goes into insufficient neighborhoods, like places that, like we were talking about, the food deserts, and take the truck goes and parks in a parking lot or on a street, and they allow people to come and buy fresh produce at a lower rate than probably what you would buy in a grocery store. And they also offer it to where they can use their food stamps. So I had sold over 100 pounds to Farm Truck 912 for the community to be able to have that access to fresh produce. And you will actually be very surprised. A lot of people never have tasted a fresh tomato before.
Wow. How can someone, I guess, tell the difference between a fresh tomato and one that they may get like, I guess from the store that's kind of just been sitting?
Well, for me, I've noticed the texture, of course. A lot of people, how you see a cucumber or a tomato in the grocery store, you see just how round it is. It's red, it's big. Tomatoes don't necessarily come like that. Tomatoes come in very different shapes and sizes and colors. A lot of time, what you see in the store, and I hate to be like this, some of it is genetically modified. It's been sprayed with something so it can hold freshness. Produce is not supposed to last 2-3 weeks out on the shelf. I've had tomatoes where, unless they're green, I've had tomatoes and maybe they last maybe a week, but that lets you know that it is real. It's been picked from the vine. There's no more nutrition going to it. There's no more, you know, it doesn't have the life support that the actual plant is giving the tomato. So in some ways, it's dying. But you would notice there's a bit of more of a crunch with fresh produce. You will see how flavored, I don't like tomatoes personally, but I've noticed since I've been growing tomatoes, I've taken a liking to tomatoes. I'm at a point where I literally pick a tomato, dust it off, and I bite right into it. But I cannot do that with a grocery store tomato.
Yeah. Wow. That's good to know. Sometimes I haven't done it in a while, but I've made tacos in the past and, you know, I'm just picking up a tomato. I know what, like, I wouldn't want in a tomato, but I never thought about it having to be crunchy. Cause I think we're used to just the softness of a tomato. So that's good to know. I wanted to ask, I know you mentioned your partnership with the Forsyth Farmers Market, 912 is the food truck, correct?
Yes.
Where else can we buy or find some of your produce?
Well, right now, Farm Truck 912 is the only entity that I've been selling to. I've been trying to sell to different restaurants or even just posting on my social media page, CJ's Produce, letting people know I have it. You know, if you want it, I have it. It's been a slow grind, but it's slowly picking up.
I'll break into the interview right here to talk about the things we do here at the Savannah Morning News and SavannahNow.com beyond podcasts. Put simply, we deliver the best in local news coverage. We go in depth on topics important to you, whether it's Savannah's city manager search or the best new restaurants around town. If you aren't a subscriber, now's the time to try us out. You can get full access to our digital content for $1 a month for the next 6 months. And all those stories marked subscriber only on our website, this gets you behind the paywall. So dig under those couch cushions or check the pockets of those pants you put in the laundry for some coins or small bills and sign up today. Go to SavannahNow.com/subscribe now and sign up. Now back to the interview with Edwin Thomas.
That's good. I like to hear that it's slowly picking up. One question I did have, while it's just on the top of my mind, had you been following the news about the debt relief for Black farmers?
Yes, I have.
What are your thoughts on that? You know, I followed it here and there, but what are your thoughts on that?
I believe it's a long overdue process, but basically, your average farmer is 65 years old. So you're thinking about, you know, my parents or my grandparents and stuff. They're not necessarily technological savvy. So they've been doing things a certain way for so many years and not understanding that, you know, you have to get yourself registered. You need a gate card. You need, you know, X, Y, and Z for you to even be able to, you know, apply for this. And with me, like I said, it's a slow grind for me. I'm still learning. I'm trying to get to the point because I want to be able to fully understand what I'm signing myself up for before I just jump into that ring. But if we can just be able to push the information, or at least be able to push the information to the older farmers to where they can understand it, because you're using such big words and vernacular. They don't get that. They just want to grow their stuff, and if they can sell it to the grocery store, they sell it to the grocery store, and you know, and that's it.
No, I completely get it. My jaw dropped when you said that the average farmer is 65. I mean, I guess it shouldn't be too surprising, but you know, thinking about the methods that they're used to and how much they have to get acclimated to newer methods in farming, I mean, that has to be a lot. And the reason I asked you about it, because I know that there was a temporary restraining order issued on the loan forgiveness programs that would have allowed Black, Latino, Native American, Asian American, or Pacific Island, those of Pacific Island descent, to have their USDA backed loan balances paid off. And I know that's probably put a hamper, I know that's probably further crippled farmers, particularly those of color. So I'm glad you spoke to that. Because, you know, I'm from Atlanta. And while I knew that we had a food forest and I knew that we had urban farmers, it didn't cross my mind that that would be the case in Savannah. And so when I was sent the article, I was like, look at him, Black man with a green thumb. So I said, let me go ahead and interview him for the 912, because I just didn't know outside of this. And I did some research, but I was like, this is the only information out here about CJ's produce. And so I said, well, let me reach out, see if they'd be interested in speaking with me, if he'd be interested in speaking with me. And I'm glad you did, because I don't think many people knew about the CJ's produce or the initiatives and work that you're doing in the community.
They don't. We're going to be very honest. They don't. And that's probably been the hardest thing about all of this, trying to get the word out. The community garden is in Kyler Brownsville. It's on 2301 Harden Street, pretty much the intersection of 39th and Harden Street, H-A-R-D-E-N. Mm-hmm. And we started, you know, we would get on the community call and, you know, we were letting them know what we wanted to do. And, you know, we were here or whatever. If anybody had any questions, of course, they had reservations. Not really understanding the concept, just from speaking to us one time. My whole goal is to be able to feed all of Brownsville, or at least have food accessible for them to be able to eat. Mm-hmm. And you know, they were talking about fencing and everything, and I'm like, no, I want Tom from 38th and Harden to be able to walk over here. And if he wants some collard greens, pick you some collard greens. Mm. And they were saying, oh, well, what if someone comes and cleans it out? Well, apparently you were just moving slow, because that's the whole goal. I would love to be able to go over there one day and see every collard green picked, every green pepper picked, and every okra picked. Mm. And since the article has come out, now I'm getting a whole lot of support. I'm getting, you know, volunteers, people wanting to donate. I guess they have their own little small garden and they want to donate plants and everything to the community garden. So it's coming full circle. Now that we got a little headwind, it's coming about. It is coming right on about.
Wow, that's good. I'm glad that there has been at least some people who've said, you know what, I like this. Let me help. One thing that I asked when I covered the Atlanta Food Forest that I want to know of you is how, I guess, do you worry about people overpicking, like that there won't be enough crop?
Well, to tell you the truth, depending, like a lot of stuff, the more you pick, the more you get. And a lot of people don't understand that concept. Meaning, if I get a whole bushel of a bundle of collard greens, if we pick, once that becomes a full, if we go ahead and pick that within the next few weeks or so, it's going to be more coming back. And a lot of people don't get that, because if you have bell peppers, I've planted bell peppers in the end of March, and my bell pepper plants lasted me till Thanksgiving.
Oh, wow.
So you can only imagine the picking I went through. at one point in time. And then you want to pick because you want newer stuff to pop up. You want, you know, and even if you just go and pick off, you know, the stuff that's dying or been eaten by, you know, bugs or whatever the case may be, that allows the plant to focus its energy on, you know, producing more. So you want, I want them to go over there. I want them to take it. I want them to eat.
Yeah. Are you worried about, I guess, anyone picking crops before they finish growing?
Yes and no. Because most people, we would be surprised at some of the general knowledge that you already have without you being a quote unquote farmer. You've seen what a tomato looks like. You know, well, it's got to turn red first before I pick it. So more than likely, you will go, oh, okay, well, it's not red yet. So you will wait until, it, you know, give it a week or so, and you'll go back and you will try to pick it then. Or you know, well, this bell pepper is kind of small. Okay, well, I know it can get bigger, so let me let it sit another week. So it's a give and take thing. And, you know, for some people, it'd be a learning experience for them as well, because I just don't want it to be a quote unquote community garden where you go and just pick your own vegetables. Like, we want to do an outdoor classroom. We want to do different demonstrations. We want people to know, you know, because I make garden boxes as well. If you wanted a garden box, we can, you know, we can help get you a garden box, and you can start, you can have your own bell peppers and tomato plants at your house. You know, you even if, because the garden box isn't that big, it's 36 inches wide, 36 inches long, 18 inches wide, 18 inches deep. So that way it can be in apartments or classrooms or even for the elderly, the ones who can't go outside. You know, you can set it on your porch and, you know, be able to have your own fresh produce at your own leisure. And a lot of people get a thrill out of seeing the process.
Wow. I like that. That sounds so cool. I feel like I need to get me a garden box too. So you all haven't started your teaching classes yet, but that's something you want to do.
Yes, we haven't started our teaching classes yet. Like I said, it's been hard just trying to get the word out, or at least, you know, some people just interested in going. But like I said, since the article has come out, a lot of people, they're starting to pay attention now. And we, like I said, volunteers are always needed. It's never a day. I even tell people in the community on the community call, if you have something you want to plant, go out there, go plant it. You don't need me to come out there. I don't mind coming. But if you know you have a bell pepper plant, it's not doing well, take your shovel, go on out there, find you a little piece, plant it in there, water it. Mm-hmm. Like, don't feel as though this is my garden. This is Kyler Brownsville's garden.
I like that. I like that. One thing I wanted to also ask you, you know, talk about the Kyler Brown neighborhood, the Kyler Brownsville neighborhood. Can you talk a little bit about it? Because I read in the article that it was a well-known Black neighborhood, and now it's filled with blight. Can you talk a little bit about the neighborhood and how your garden is working to help change that and revitalize the image of what it once was?
So I can't give you exact dates, but I know that Kyler Brownsville was for your prominent Black people, doctors, lawyers, W.W. Law. I don't know if you've heard of him, but he lived in that neighborhood. And, you know, it was always a sense of pride in Brownsville. And, you know, I'm learning more about Brownsville. Like, they had gardens and everything like that as well. And a lot of people have been telling me, oh, I've been staying here since, you know, before they even paved the roads. And if we know, if anybody knows Savannah like I know Savannah, we're very prideful. And let alone the communities that's here in Savannah, they're very prideful and believe in, you know, in their community. Now, as you know, of course, years went on, you know, it's been deterioration, houses falling apart, you know, it's just not. And today, Brownsville isn't necessarily the best neighborhood. You know, you have abandoned houses, you know, just empty lots with trash. It's not, it's not the best. Mm-hmm. But for me, I found out this is the best place. This is exactly where I needed to be. In some ways, a lot of people in Brownsville don't realize what they have. So we want to be able to build the community back up to what it once was, if not even better. And what way to start that with food?
I love that. I love that concept because food really does bring a community together. Like, I love that the thought process behind that. I really do. One question that we always ask people for the newsletter, the 912, is why do you love the 912? And when we talk about the 912, I typically mean the Savannah area. So why do you love the 912?
Well, I was born and raised here. I went to Mercer Middle School, left Mercer. I went to Benedictine Military School, or BC, as a lot of people know here in town. But it made me who I am. And what other way can I not love it? You pretty much have everything. You have a beach. We have a nice downtown. You have shopping. We have a number of restaurants to get whatever your case may be. And just in general, as a whole, the people are pretty good. I have no complaints about, you know, the people here, but, you know, to know us is to love us.
Mm. No, I love it. I love that you said that. I've done quite a few 912 interviews, and I'm always intrigued by what people say they like about the city. I've gotten the culture here, and it's funny, I've gotten that it's just the right pace. So thank you for sharing that. And thank you for speaking with me for the 912 and being our guest for the commute. I really appreciate it.
Oh, no problem. I appreciate you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Commute and to our presenting sponsor, National Office Systems. Please support them as they support this podcast. If you enjoyed this episode of The Commute and want to hear more, download archived episodes on your podcast app by searching The Commute with @SavannahOpinion. The Commute returns Thursday when Due editor Zach Dennis talks with arts columnist Rob Hessler. We'll talk to you then.